Chapter 46. While these things are being transacted in the conference, it was announced to Kaiser that the cavalry of Ariovistus were approaching nearer the mound, and were riding up to our men, and casting stones and weapons at them. Kaiser made an end of his speech and betook himself to his men, and commanded them that they should by no means return a weapon upon the enemy. For though he saw that an engagement with the cavalry would be without any danger to his chosen legion, yet he did not think proper to engage, lest after the enemy were routed, it might be said that they had been ensnared by him under the sanction of a conference. When it was spread abroad among the common soldiery with what haughtiness Ariovistus had behaved at the conference, and how he had ordered the Romans to quit Gaul, and how his cavalry had made an attack upon our men, and how this had broken off the conference, a much greater alacrity and eagerness for battle was infused into our army. Chapter 47. 2 days after, Ariovistus sends ambassadors to Kaiser to state that he wished to treat with him about those things which had been begun to be treated of between them, but had not been concluded, and to beg that he would either again appoint a day for a conference, or if he were not willing to do that, that he would send one of his officers as an ambassador to him. There did not appear to Kaiser any good reason for holding a conference, and the more so as the day before the Germans could not be restrained from casting weapons at our men. He thought he should not without great danger send to him as ambassador one of his Roman officers, and should expose him to savage men. It seemed, therefore, most proper to send to him C. Valerius Procillus, the son of C. Valerius Caburus, a young man of the highest courage and accomplishments, whose father had been presented with the freedom of the city by C. Valerius Flaccus, both on account of his fidelity and on account of his knowledge of the Gallic language, which Ariovistus, by long practice, now spoke fluently, and because in his case the Germans would have no motive for committing violence, and as his colleague, M. Metius, who had shared the hospitality of Ariovistus. He commissioned them to learn what Ariovistus had to say and report to him. But when Ariovistus saw them before him in his camp, he cried out in the presence of his army, "Why were they come to him? Was it for the purpose of acting as spies?" He stopped them when attempting to speak, and cast them into chains. Chapter 48. The same day he moved his camp forward and pitched under a hill 6 miles from Kaiser's camp. The day following he led his army past Kaiser's camp, and encamped 2 miles beyond him, with this design, that he might cut off Kaiser from the corn and provisions which might be conveyed to him from the Sequani and the Aedui. For 5 successive days from that day, Kaiser drew out his forces before the camp and put them in battle order, that, if Ariovistus should be willing to engage in battle, an opportunity might not be wanting to him. Ariovistus all this time kept his army in camp, but engaged daily in cavalry skirmishes. The method of battle in which the Germans had practiced themselves was this. They were 6,000 horse, and as many very active and courageous foot, one of whom each of the horse selected out of the whole army for his own protection. By these foot, they were constantly accompanied in their engagements. To these the horse retired. These, on any emergency, rushed forward. If any one, upon receiving a very severe wound, had fallen from his horse, they stood around him. If it was necessary to advance further than usual, or to retreat more rapidly, so great from practice was their swiftness, that, supported by the manes of the horses, they could keep pace with their speed. Chapter 49. Perceiving that Ariovistus had kept himself in camp, Kaiser, that he might not any longer be cut off from provisions, chose a convenient position for a camp beyond that place in which the Germans had encamped, at about 600 paces from them, and having drawn up his army in 3 lines, marched to that place. He ordered the 1st and 2nd lines to be under arms, the 3rd to fortify the camp. This place was distant from the enemy about 600 paces, as had been stated. Thither Ariovistus sent light troops, about 16,000 men in number, with all his cavalry, which forces were to intimidate our men and hinder them in their fortification. Kaiser, nevertheless, as he had before arranged, ordered two lines to drive off the enemy, the third to execute the work. The camp being fortified, he left there two legions and a portion of the auxiliaries, and led back the other four legions into the larger camp. Chapter 50. The next day, according to his custom, Kaiser let out his forces from both camps, and having advanced a little from the larger one, drew up his line of battle, and gave the enemy an opportunity of fighting. When he found that they did not even then come out from their entrenchments, he led back his army into camp about noon. Then at last Ariovistus sent part of his forces to attack the lesser camp. The battle was vigorously maintained on both sides till the evening. At sunset, after many wounds had been inflicted and received, Ariovistus led back his forces into camp. When Kaiser inquired of his prisoners wherefore Ariovistus did not come to the engagement, he discovered this to be the reason: that among the Germans it was the custom for their matrons to pronounce from lots and divination whether it were expedient that the battle should be engaged in or not. That they had said that it was not the will of heaven that the Germans should conquer if they engaged in battle before the new moon. Chapter 51. The day following, Kaiser left what seemed sufficient as a guard for both camps, and then drew up all the auxiliaries in sight of the enemy, before the lesser camp, because he was not very powerful in the number of legionary soldiers, considering the number of the enemy, that thereby he might make use of his auxiliaries for appearance. He himself, having drawn up his army in three lines, advanced to the camp of the enemy. Then at last, of necessity, the Germans drew their forces out of camp, and disposed them canton by canton, at equal distances, the Hyrades, Marcomanni, Triboci, Vangionis, Nemetes, Seducii, Suevi, and surrounded their whole army with their chariots and wagons, that no hope might be left in flight. On these they placed their women, who with disheveled hair and in tears entreated the soldiers, as they went forward to battle, not to deliver them into slavery to the Romans. Chapter 52. Kaiser appointed over each legion a lieutenant and a quaestor, that every one might have them as witness of his valor. He himself began the battle at the head of the right wing, because he had observed that part of the enemy to be the least strong. Accordingly, our men, upon the signal being given, vigorously made an attack upon the enemy, and the enemy so suddenly and rapidly rushed forward that there was no time for casting the javelins at them. Throwing aside, therefore, their javelins, they fought with swords hand to hand. But the Germans, according to their custom, rapidly forming a phalanx, sustained the attack of our swords. There were found very many of our soldiers who leaped upon the phalanx, and with their hands tore away the shields and wounded the enemy from above. Although the army of the enemy was routed on the left wing and put to flight, they still pressed heavily on our men from the right wing, by the great number of their troops. On observing which, P. Crassus, a young man, who commanded the cavalry, as he was more disengaged than those who were employed in the fight, sent the third line as a relief to our men who were in distress. Chapter 53. Thereupon the engagement was renewed, and all the enemy turned their backs, nor did they cease to flee until they arrived at the River Rhine, about 50 miles from that place. There some few, either relying on their strength, endeavored to swim over, or, finding boats, procured their safety. Among the latter was Ariovistus, who, meeting with a small vessel tied to the bank, escaped in it. Our horse pursued and slew all the rest of them. Ariovistus had two wives, one a Suevian by nation, whom he had brought with him from home, the other a Norican, the sister of King Vocion, whom he had married in Gaul, she having been sent thither for that purpose by her brother. Both perished in that flight. Of their two daughters, one was slain, the other captured. See Valerius Procillus, as he was being dragged by his guards in the flight, bound with a triple chain, fell into the hands of Kaiser himself, as he was pursuing the enemy with his cavalry. This circumstance indeed afforded Kaiser no less pleasure than the victory itself, because he saw a man of the first rank in the province of Gaul, his intimate acquaintance and friend, rescued from the hand of the enemy and restored to him, and that fortune had not diminished aught of the joy and exultation of that day by his destruction. He, Procillus, said that in his own presence the lots had been thrice consulted respecting him, whether he should immediately be put to death by fire, or be reserved for another time, that by the favor of the lots he was uninjured. M. Metius also was found and brought back to him, Caesar. Chapter 54. This battle having been reported beyond the Rhine, the Suevi, who had come to the banks of that river, began to return home, when the Ubii, who dwelt nearest to the Rhine, pursuing them, while much alarmed, slew a great number of them. Caesar, having concluded two very important wars in one campaign, conducted his army into winter quarters among the Sequani, a little earlier than the season of the year required. He appointed Labienus over the winter quarters, and set out in person for Hither Gaul to hold the assizes.